Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Parenthood. We're so often consumed with the job of delivering our babies safely into this world that we forget about the after. And then we're so consumed with our babies that we don't think about ourselves. We focus so hard on nurturing our little ones that we forget that we have to recover from the strain of pregnancy, from the gargantuan job of creating a whole new human being from a cluster of cells, and from labour. My guest today is the postnatal exercise and recovery specialist, Lyndon Littlefair. Having spent the last three decades supporting women after the birth of their babies, he believes that there's a crucial element we often overlook. There's a great deal of stress, he says, both physically and emotionally, placed on a woman's body throughout the whole pregnancy and labour process. Sometimes we need to reduce this level of stress in order for the body to fully recover and build up from there. Thank you for joining me today, Lyndon. It's great to have you on The Parenthood. It's interesting what you say. We often associate the word sort of exhausted, overwhelmed, emotional with the postnatal period, but not often stress. And the idea that women are on maternity leave, this idea that they could be stressed, is quite alien to some. Why are new mums stressed?
I think in terms of stress, sometimes we look at stress in terms of, it's just stressed in terms of can't do something or something's very challenging. I think the whole process is quite a stressful element on the body. So there's a lot of physiological stress in the body. There's a lot of emotional stress in the body. So there's just a lot of things where the body's going, wow, I'm just overloaded. Overloaded is probably the best word to use. And it's not just emotional stuff. There's a lot of physiological process of going through through pregnancy and going through labour and going through birth and delivery. And then especially for first time mums getting the baby home and going, wow, what now? What now? So lots of individual things can cause a stress response in the body, not just the typical sort of, something happens to you or someone gets stressed. It's like just lots of individual things add up to form this stress loading on the body.
Well, and I think we sort of often don't really think about, how physical having a baby is, because you don't really see any evidence of the pregnancy for the first, 15 weeks or so. You sort of think, oh, they're fine to do everything that they used to. But actually, if you think about what the body is doing when you're gestating a baby, that's the most physically exhausting thing you can possibly do, is grow a whole new human being. Plus, you're growing an organ, like the placenta is a whole new organ you're growing just to nourish the baby while it's inside you.
No, exactly. There's a huge amount of, first of all, physical changes, let alone hormonal changes, let alone emotional changes the body's going through. And there's a lot of things which can be done, which to help out, but literally a whole stress thing is huge. It's huge changes. And it takes, everyone thinks it's focused on the pregnancy and in the birth, and everyone forgets about the post-birth sort of period. And this is why I specialize in this area, because there's so much help to be needed. So many mums need the help for this. So in terms of stress on the body, absolutely huge.
And then emotionally too, I mean, I think that there's a lot of pressure on women to deliver a baby safely. There's that connection you have with the baby, there's that responsibility that is your body and what you eat and drink and how you behave and the kind of dangers you may be exposing yourself to. I remember thinking, freaking out, because I'd eaten tara masala when I was like 6 weeks pregnant, and I was like, oh, is it okay? Have I done something to the baby? And I remember like a whole day of this stress of like, have I done something really serious to this vulnerable baby? And women are kind of experiencing this on a daily basis. You breathe in cigarette smoke, or you breathe in exhaust fumes, or you catch a cold and you have to take some medicine, or you become ill and you have to take some medicine. There's that tremendous guilt. And I think that all builds up to that kind of emotional burden of being totally responsible for the child that's growing inside you.
Yeah, no, definitely. There's a lot of fear and there's a lot of unknown. And those two factors combined together to go to, you know, completely stress out, you know, pregnant mums and new mums. There's so many fear. So everyone's got a different opinion, and everyone's got an opinion about what's right, what's wrong for the baby. There's so much pressure from social media, the media, celebrities, everything in terms of you must do it this way and they must do it this way. And this is the best way to do it. So, well, all this pressure adds up, and everyone gets into a state of confusion, saying, well, what's the best way? And I think the best way is whatever works for the mum, the family, and the parents, etc. So there's huge amounts of stress.
We've talked about this notion of the overload of the overflowing cup, that we are, you know, programmed to be able to deal with sort of small bouts of stress or stress on an individual basis. But when you've almost got like the perfect storm of stress in the postnatal period.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the overflowing cup is literally, if you can imagine a cup, and this is your ability to withstand stress and to handle stress. So, and every individual stress, whether it be nutritional stress or physiological stress or emotional stress, each of these is a drop of water in this cup. And each drop by themselves is like, yeah, that's not too bad. It's quite comfortable. You can deal with that. But literally, when you get all these individual drops of stress going up, you get to a point where then the cup overflows and literally the body can't handle anymore, and that's when the body starts to break down.
And I think, you know, add into all of this, well, certainly when I speak to women postnatally and when I prepare women for the postnatal period, I think one of the biggest things I talk about is sleep deprivation. And one of the things I'm always saying to women who are heavily pregnant is, try and sleep now in the middle of the day, because you're banking sleep that you will be so grateful for afterwards. But you know that sleep should really take the biggest priority when it comes to sort of what you need to do. You know, if you're tired, if you've been awake in the night, it doesn't matter if your house isn't clean. It doesn't matter if you haven't done the supermarket shop, or you know that the washing's not on. You need to sleep.
Yeah, definitely. Sleep's a big thing. And when we look at sleep, we look at a thing called circadian rhythm. Circadian rhythm is your natural sleep-wake cycle. So literally, this is controlled by daylight. So first in the morning, cortisol is released. So that you have a big spike of cortisol, which goes up. And as the day goes on, the cortisol slowly releases off and comes down. And then at evening time, it's when melatonin kicks in, which is more, it's being described as a sleep hormone. So literally, you know, nice pre-kids, always talk about pre-kids and post-kids. Pre-kids state, you've got basically a nice relaxing sort of flow of this cortisol release, comes down, melatonin kicks in. And melatonin kicks in to aid recovery. It helps you to sleep. It helps from a cellular level, from a whole hormonal level. Basically, that's a great sleep pattern. Then kids come along. And then literally they've got a mind of their own, say, well, I want to be fed this time of the night. And all of a sudden, this whole hormonal sort of sleep cycle just gets thrown out the window. So literally, you know, 2 o'clock feed, 11 o'clock feed, the body's saying, oh, "I should be asleep now," but no, you're not. You're wide awake. So what that does is affects cortisol levels, and so your cortisol levels start coming down, and melatonin kicking in. All of a sudden, now you get little spikes of cortisol, and it's like the body's saying, "Well, hang on a minute, this is not my true recovery state." If you're looking specifically at physiological recovery time, it's between about 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. And that's when the body's recovering from a physiological point of view. Unfortunately, if someone's awake around that time, then that's going to mess things up. Your psychological recovery is between about 2 o'clock and 6 a.m. So that tends to, when you get a deeper sleep, you have more REM sleep, et cetera, going through the deeper sleep cycles, et cetera. But same again, if you're waking up early, the baby's waking up early, that just throws it out. So that's why sometimes you might feel physically okay in the morning, but mentally just shocked, depending on what time of the night you need to be woken up by your little one.
And obviously, your baby's routine is now your routine. You can't, you know, say, well, sorry, love, it's, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, it's time to go to sleep. You know, babies need to be fed when they need to be fed. But what can parents of new babies do who are awake throughout the night do to help themselves with this, you know, sleep deprivation and also the discombobulation of our normal sort of sleep cycle?
No, definitely. The big thing to focus on is for the mums and dads is they probably have a very organised sleep routine for the baby, and everyone's like, organised, do this at a certain time, do this at a certain time. It's like, well, hang on. Do you have a sleep routine for your mum and dad? Basically, the parents need to have a sleep routine as well in terms of what's going on. One big thing I talked about with your circadian rhythm is light. Is light controls the circadian rhythm. So literally the light will wake up in the morning when the light dims down, literally the darkness all controls and helps to release the melatonin. So for mums and dads, in the evening, get the baby to bed, have you sleeping, etc. Now's not the time to be checking emails, to be on Instagram, so scrolling through, to be exposing yourself to lots of light. So literally looking at quality of sleep rather than quantity of sleep. So have an evening routine, you know, no late night emails, no phones, etc. Trying to prioritize sleep in terms of getting more sleep. I would say more sleep, better quality sleep. So instead of, you know, checking emails until 10 o'clock at night and then checking on your phone, especially the blue light from the phones, which stimulates more cortisol production or suppresses, should say, melatonin. Just think about your sleep and how much sleep you're getting and the quality of sleep, and also. One big thing is, best thing I'd probably say to parents, take your phone out of the bedroom. A lot of mums and dads use their phone as an alarm clock. It's probably one of the worst things you can do, because even just having that phone right next to you, I mean, the phone is these days, all the iPhones, etc., there are many computers. What that does is creates electromagnetic radiation. If you're sleeping, you wouldn't sleep next to a big high-powered computer, but you're sleeping right next to a high-powered computer. So literally, the mums I've told this, taking the phones out of the room and just got a normal basic alarm clock, their quality of sleep improves massively just by that simple thing. Other things they can do, any light in the room will also affect their sleep patterns. So any electronics or stuff in the rooms, any TVs, if you have a TV in the room, that even that little red light, the standby light, that can actually still affect you. Some people are more sensitive than others, etc. for this, but literally anything like that can still interrupt your sleep pattern that you have. So it's just prioritizing sleep.
I think sometimes you can have, like, if you've got your baby sleeping in your room with you, that's also another source of noise that's quite disruptive. Oh. And obviously, if your baby wakes up and needs you, you need to know about that. But very often newborn babies are quite snuffly and sneezy. And I remember I just ended up not having my babies in the room right next to me. I'd have them a little bit further away where I could hear them, but I wouldn't hear every little snuffle, because that would wake me up and I'd find it very difficult to get back to sleep. I'm someone who's very susceptible to noise. So actually earplugs work really well, because they drown out the kind of peripheral noise that someone walking down the street or someone with their radio on, but I can still hear what I need to hear.
Yeah, definitely. I think our daughter lasted maybe 2 weeks in our room together. Mm-hmm. So just our personal thing, we could hear everything, any little noises, like anything. And even we moved into a room which is like a couple of meters away anyway, so she went moving to our room early. Everyone's got different opinions about this. Everyone's got different things they have to do. But then we still had a baby monitor on. Hang on a minute, we can still hear every single thing. So our personal thing, we just went, right, okay, we need some sleep. Her door's open, our door's open. If she cries, we'll hear her. Yeah. And, yep, she cried, we heard her, and there's no problems at all there. But literally just going, right, let's try and make our sleep environment. You know, it's just like, you know, no TVs in the bedroom. I'm a big believer in no TVs in the bedroom anyway, but literally just go, well, I mean, everyone's got to work out what works for them as well. There's no right or wrong sort of thing. Everyone, don't run out there just now. And if your baby's sleeping in the room, that's fine. But it's just got to work out something which works for you that means that you can get enough recovery in the evening time, but also, you know, still look after your baby and find that nice balance, et cetera. So it's just, that's always a tough one. Baby in the room, not in the room, in the bed, next to the bed, etc. It's like, hey, I'm no expert with that one, but literally in terms of recovery, you do to sort of look at how much time, how much quality sleep you're getting at nighttime, and what's the factors affecting this, and say, well, is this affecting my sleep? Yes or no? Is this making me feel better about, not better about myself, better in terms of my recovery, and waking up the next morning, not dragging myself out of bed and feeling completely wiped out? Or is this making myself, you know, just completely wiped out instead? So this is working out what's the best solution for you, which for you as a couple, as an individual.
That trial and error, try something, and if it works, it's pretty evident, and if it doesn't, then it's not. I mean, I often speak to women who are really dependent on quite a lot of caffeine during the day because they're just so tired that they feel that their caffeine is what they need to kind of keep them awake. But certainly what I know is that the half-life of caffeine is actually quite long-lasting. So if you have a lunchtime coffee, you're still going to be feeling the effects of that caffeine at 10 o'clock in the evening. And obviously it's different. We metabolize things also slightly differently. So some people will have a lunchtime coffee and sleep really soundly, and some people will have lunchtime coffee and literally not be buzzing until midnight. But things like sort of trying, well, maybe I switch my lunchtime coffee to some decaf coffee. Let's see if that makes a difference, or some herbal tea, or, you know, I love an afternoon cup of tea, but I found it does affect my sleep. So I just switched to decaf tea and I don't even notice the difference apart from when it comes to sleeping.
No, definitely. I think with caffeine and sugar is a huge thing in the postnatal period. I was calling this phrase called survival eating. In the postnatal period, mums and dads do this thing called survival eating, where they're just reliant on caffeine, reliant on sugar to get themselves through the day. The problem with this is it can add more stress to the body. Caffeine will still, in fact, influence your cortisol levels, okay? Don't get me wrong, cortisol is good, it's a great hormone, it's great for waking yourself up in the morning, getting you moving, because it's essential for getting yourself moving. But literally, if you just filling yourself up with caffeine, yes, caffeine has a long half-life, up to 8 hours half-life, so 50% basically. So literally, it's going to be a while before the caffeine gets out of the system. As you say, if someone's very susceptible to caffeine, the effect it has on their body, that's going to just ramp them up even higher. So literally, instead of going for the big highs and lows of caffeine sort of thing or sugar, what you need to do is trying to think, okay, well, how can I regulate my blood sugar levels, and also look at things that I need, which are good for me. Let's backtrack a little bit and talk about nutrition, because nutrition is hugely individual. If you go into a bookshop, you've got thousands of books, all written by some doctor or endorsed by a celebrity, and all have a very compelling case for their way of eating. And it's like, okay, great, that might work for one person, but it doesn't work for everyone. So literally the individual, especially postnatally, needs to sort of try and work out what foods work best for them in terms of what gives them more energy and also what takes away from the energy. So having caffeine and sugar sometimes might give them short-term energy, but then afterwards, a couple of hours later, crashing big time. Because especially sugars, you get this initial sugar rush, then basically then the body breaks it down, etc. And when you hit this big sugar low, what the brain does, the brain detects the low sugar in the body. You know? So then it goes, release cortisol and other hormones to try and counteract this low sugar period. So that in itself, by having the sugars, especially when you get the sugar low, is stress on the body. So it's just doing things which becoming aware of what foods and what sort of sorts of foods are good for your body, and then have a big long-lasting effect in terms of energy-wise.
It's always, I was sort of fuel as like bang for you. I mean, food as a kind of fuel. So you're thinking about, you know, using super fuels or using sort of bog standard fuel. And this idea that, you know, it is sort of performance enhancing if you eat well, relatively well. And I'm not saying never having a biscuit, because actually food is a joy, eating is a joy. I really, really enjoy eating. And if all I could eat was kind of kale that I didn't really like, then that would sort of make me quite a lot more depressed. So it's about finding what you like to eat that's also relatively good for you. And I guess in moderation, the kind of bad things that you might really like. I mean, like alcohol.
Yep. No, definitely. It's finding the balance. I mean, everyone talks about we have to cut out this and cut out that and don't eat this and don't eat that. I'm the other end of the scale where let's find a plate and let's fill your plate with lots of good things that you enjoy eating as well. And then if you fill yourself with all the good things, there's not much sort of space for all the rubbish, basically. But the same thing from a psychological point of view. I mean, life would be pretty boring if you cut out biscuits or other things, you know, all the time. It's find the balance which is right for you. And just knowing that, well, okay, if I'm having this amount of food sort of thing, then I'm eating myself lots of good, healthy options on my plate, then I can afford to have a few other things as well. Alcohol, we know alcohol is not a great effect on the sleep patterns, okay? But then for some people, it might help them just relax and sleep better. So it's just, there's no right or wrong. I think what happens with a lot of people is they have too much of one thing or too much of another thing. And then that causes a big stress response in the body from a abdominal bloating point of view, or from a lethargy point of view, or just in terms of just that start of reliance as well. So, you know, just end of the day, do you have to have a glass of wine? Does that become two glasses of wine, three glasses of wine, etc.? So I think also understanding food for yourself. I mean, I always say to people, look, keep a food diary. Get a food diary. I mean, that's another thing to do, which we don't want to overload this person's another issue. But if you kept a food diary even just for a couple of weeks and say, okay, when you eat a food, write it down, but also how does it make you feel straight afterwards? How does it make you feel a couple of hours afterwards? Does it make you feel better or does it make you feel worse? So what that does is empowers the person to say, or the mum to say, okay, I know I'm good with these sorts of food. But these sorts of food, and go, oh, maybe not so good. And maybe just go, well, okay, this food is better for me. I need to have a few bit more of this and a bit less of the other stuff. So just finding out what works best for the individual is the biggest thing on here.
Because presumably digesting food that is hard to digest, or processing food that might have other effects like alcohol, like caffeine, like sugar, that is then the physical stress on the body. That's harder for the body to process than stuff that's good.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So there's still nutritional stress. And as I said before, there's one thing might work for one person. And if you've got an intolerance for certain types of foods and you're eating it, your digestive system is sometimes being overloaded. Excuse me. So literally it's going, okay, is this body, is this making it harder for my body to digest, etc. One thing we need to think about as well in terms of your autonomous nervous system, this is your automatic nervous system. This is basically one which happens automatically and it's responsible for heart rate, breathing, respiration. It's got two different sides of it. It's got sympathetic, which is your fight or flight, and it's got parasympathetic, which is your whole calming effect. And digestion, the branch of the autonomous nervous system responsible for digestion is your parasympathetic, which is when everything's nice and calm, it's all calming down, etc. So literally even what you're eating, how you're eating it, and literally the time eating things and the process you're eating and doing. If you're doing 1,000 other ones things while you're still eating, it's like, okay, the body is not giving it its best chance of digesting things. So certain things which may affect the digestive system will definitely cause more stress in the body. And if you're not eating in a calm environment with a newborn baby screaming, you're trying to get a snack down, that's not exactly a nice calm environment. But sometimes it's out of the possible.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And actually, you know, if you think about it, a new mother is usually, well, quite often breastfeeding or partially breastfeeding. So there's the kind of added workload of producing milk. She's probably also awake many more hours than she usually is, and also probably more physically active, doing kind of repetitive sort of things. So you're as a new mother, you're asking a lot of your body, but if you're not putting the right things inside it to fuel it, you're not giving it the best chance. I guess it's a bit like doing a marathon in really ill-fitting trainers. You know, to give yourself the best chance of running that marathon, enjoying it and nailing it, you're going to get the, you know, really great fitting trainers that you've worn in and they're, you know, right for your gait. You wouldn't think, oh, I'll just put on my old, you know, trainers from when I was at school and think you're going to nail that marathon.
No, definitely. I think, you nailed it there in terms of some marathon. I mean, having a baby and the postnatal period, it is like a marathon. So I was trying to tell my mum to say, look, preparation is key. So literally prepare your food.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
You've got help, it's great. You can ask friends for help, you know. And sometimes it depends if the husband cooks or not. I'm the cook in our house, so my wife's quite lucky in that sense. But literally, cook some couple of different sort of strategies in terms of food preparation is make sure that you've got good food and good snacks available. You've got basic things in the fridge, in the cupboard, which are healthy, good for you, providing good amount of energy, good amount of fats, good amount of recovery, sort of nutrition for the body. So I'd say literally before the baby comes along, for those mums listening right now who haven't had the baby yet, use your freezer. Start to sort of fill your freezer up with frozen goods, cook some nice home-cooked stuff and everything, and batch cook lots of those different things. So then when the baby first comes along, when you do get back from hospital for that first time, literally it's not like, oh, I'm not organized with food, I need food in the house, I haven't got any food, quick, let's get a delivery. Do all those things and just get, you know, make the most of all the home deliveries, make the most of, you know, freezers, make the most of friends. I mean, always have lots of friends ask, oh, what can I do? Can I do anything to help? So, yeah, cook a meal for me. Come around and deliver a meal, or cook a meal and put in the freezer and things like that. So then they cook a meal and it's just like, well, that's a preparation which you need for the body to keep going, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Whenever I visit a new mum with a baby, I always bring food rather than something for the baby, because the baby doesn't care about what baby grow it's wearing. And little sweet hats are worn once or twice. But a lasagna, on the other hand, is amazing. No, and you know, I think even in that sort of, you know, in the build up to the birth, if you're cooking, you know, cook twice as much as you need and then stick a batch in the freezer. And actually, if you do that for a couple of weeks, you're going to have a really good sort of head start in terms of, you know, having stuff in the freezer that you can kind of heat up.
Yeah, definitely. I think leftovers are key. If you're cooking a meal at night or then lunchtime, whatever, just cook a little bit too much. Mm. A little bit too much. So literally, tonight's dinner makes tomorrow's lunch. Mm. It's just a really simple thing. You might get sick of it after a while, but the same thing. But if it saves you another time the next day cooking sort of thing, I mean, time's a huge thing. Time's just like, if I had one person ask me the same question all the time, oh, I wish I had more time to do something. Mm. So literally doing things which is more time effective, just Google quick and easy recipes in 10 minutes. Yeah. You know,
roasting a chicken on a Monday, and then basically you can have like a chicken wrap one day and a chicken pasta the other day and chicken in a salad the other day. The other thing I love are those great, you know, I love like quinoa and lentils, but they can often be a real faff to cook. You kind of, by the time you often eat, think about lunch, you want it now. You don't want to boil the vegetable, the lentils for 20 minutes, but actually you get those great little pouch vegetables that you can literally eat. They're pre-cooked. They stick in your school, in your store cupboard, and they last forever. And that is, I think, a brilliant way to kind of whip up a salad at lunch and have something that's a bit more substantial than, you know, and filling than just a salad.
No, definitely. There's so many, I mean, so many different companies out there doing lots of quick sort of healthy meals and healthy sort of alternatives and everything. So interesting you talk about the cooking up a chicken. Chicken would be great. I mean, you cook with chicken, you have a roast chicken, but also then you could basically put all those chicken carcasses in and make bone broth. Bone broth in the postnatal period is amazing because of collagen. Collagen is super important for in terms of healing connective tissue. Okay, we know the linear elbow basically separates and thins, etc. Collagen is key in terms of rebuilding this. Collagen and vitamin C together as well, really good. Vitamin C is great for collagen production. So things like that. But yeah, the bone broth, basically the chicken, you have a sandwich, you got something else. I mean, it's like being at Christmas all over again, but you got the turkey, and you got meal for a week from lots of different things from here, for sure.
And obviously we're talking about, you know, mothers who need to be, you know, to have nutrient dense food because they're up and they're feeding. But the other thing that is, I think, quite difficult for new mothers is that they're often told, oh, you have the baby and you'll just lose all the weight. And in my experience, that just doesn't happen. I remember putting on weight when I was breastfeeding, partly because I was so ferociously hungry. But there's a sort of, you know, instinctive desire to eat, which actually makes total, you know, evolutionary sense, in that your body is probably going to store a bit more fat while it knows that your baby is dependent on this fat for breastfeeding, as opposed to kind of lose it. And then there's nothing in the larder in case you haven't been able to eat, but you still need to produce that milk.
No, definitely. So many of the new mums come to me and they always want to talk about weight loss. It's like weight loss in the postnatal period. Probably nutrition stuff is more important. And what I really say is, like, focus on your health first. Okay, focus on your health. Breastfeeding requires an extra 500 calories anyway just for breastfeeding. So literally you're going to be burning off calories from just the simple act of breastfeeding. So, and just making sure you're getting enough nutrients and lots of different foods into you, etc. So it's not the time for weight loss. And people get so really caught up with, oh, breastfeeding, will you lose weight in breastfeeding? You might do, you might not. Some of my mums do and some don't. So it's just like you will lose the weight again, but it's just a matter of, you know, this is a pretty healthy time, a pretty important time just to make sure you get yourself healthy and keep healthy. And literally, if you focus on your health first, then literally weight loss will come. You know, it's this, and being really important is create really healthy eating patterns and in the postnatal period, because those patterns will tend to stay with you when the baby's 1, 2, 3, etc. So it's just like form some good habits and form some good eating habits and patterns of what you are eating and how much you're eating, etc. Once you stop breastfeeding, the hunger will subside as well. So hopefully you did with you, Marina, but literally it's a matter of just keep things going and just be nice and steady with things and just go, okay, take your time, because it's not a big rush. You know, it's just like your baby took 9 months to be conceived and made and born and everything else, but literally just don't try and take 2 minutes to lose the weight and everything else for you. What's going on?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, you know, that you're saying that, you know, focus on developing good eating habits, because that's also what you'll pass on to your child. You know, if you've got bad eating habits and erratic eating habits that aren't necessarily great in the long term, that's what your child will see as normal. Whereas actually, if you can pass on good constructive eating habits to your child, I think that's one of the best things you can give them. But so thinking from a sort of a practical point of view, how can we sort of, are there any other things that we could do to reduce the stress on our bodies?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's literally the big thing is working out what stress you need to start with. So if you make a big list, get a big piece of paper and say, right, okay, just write down every single thing that's stressing you, every single thing that's stressing out, whether it be physical stress in the body, whether it be emotional stress, whether it be someone just annoying you sort of thing, any of those things, and say, okay, make a huge list. Next to that list, say, what things are within my control? What things do I have control over? What things do I have the power to do? There's a famous saying, I think it's by Byron Katie. She said, you can't control other people's actions. You can only control your reaction to those actions. So literally, a lot of calming down sort of time is quite important. Trying to find some me time with it, trying to think about some different things we can do. One big thing is breathing. If we look at someone's breathing patterns in terms of how they breathe, a lot of people tend to breathe what's called an inverted breathing pattern. Okay, so literally when they take a breath in, what they can do is literally raising the shoulders when they're breathing. So big thing by the start of the top in the breathing is, how are you breathing? Look in the mirror. Just look in the mirror one time. Say, okay, watch when you're breathing. Are you tensing your shoulders up? Do your shoulders raise up? Do you lift your chest up, etc.? Okay. So it's literally going, how can I change this? That's why there's a yoga technique which is more diaphragmatic breathing. So you're more breathing through your belly. Pilates talk about more lateral breathing through the sides, the ribcage. So all these techniques will just calm things down. The reason the body gets stressed when you're breathing like this is there's muscles called scalenes in the neck. And literally every time you take a breath in, you're using this inverted breathing pattern, you're tensing up these muscles, and you're using these muscles to lift up the diaphragm, lift up the ribcage. And what that does is your scalenes are linked to your adrenal glands, which basically you get a little bit short of adrenaline every time you do that. So some start at the top, start with a breathing pattern and sort of, Then just be aware of that. That's probably one of the most important things you can do in terms of calming things down. Because if you've got this inverted breathing pattern, and every time you take a breath in, you're getting a little shot of adrenaline on top of a crying baby or something else going on. Literally, you've got lots of stress constantly throughout the day. So the big thing, one of the big things, is breathing, and you could take. Get the baby to bed and just take, before you go to sleep, just focus on just a couple minutes of, one, slowing breathing down, two, practice this yoga breathing or diaphragmatic breathing, and just going, just calming the body and put it in a nice calm state. It's amazing the difference that sort of thing can make just to start with, basically, because most people tend to stress out with the breathing and breathe quite fast. And just by slowing your breathing down, by taking slower breaths in, controlling breath out, is you tend to just tap into that parasympathetic nervous system, which tends to just calm the body down a bit more.
And it's such a useful thing to be able to control. Like, if through your breathing you can control your stress levels, what an amazing skill to have kind of going forward.
Takes practice. It takes a lot of practice. But literally, that's probably in terms of the top of the chain. That's the top of the chain in terms of a big thing you can do. I like to, if a lot of my mums have got postural sort of problems from breastfeeding and bent over and controlled either in different chairs or different sorts of things, and they in this constantly bent over position from cuddling the baby, from holding the baby, from trying to get the baby to sleep. So literally, if you've got a foam roller, most people have a foam roller, if not, lying on the floor lengthways in this, opening the whole chest out, combine that with some nice relaxing diaphragmatic breathing and slowing things down. What it does is physically opens the chest out, stops the chest and shoulders bend so tight, it changes that thoracic curvature, which then tend to take the pressure out of the neck and shoulders anyway. Then by slowing the breathing down, you just get a nice or calm, relaxed state. And that, before you go to bed doing that, that's pretty good.
And actually, for those listening who don't have a foam roller, it's what, £10 from Amazon, I think.
Yeah. I mean, £10, or just lie on the floor. Mm. Lie on the floor, basically. Or grab a towel, roll a towel up so you've got some sort of something along there, which is longer, we can do rely lengthways along your spine. And that's quite nice. It's just quite nice to open the body up.
And actually, I think I see that so often with new mums is that, physical pain after giving birth. After each of my babies, I had chronic back pain. It was basically, as far as I could tell, because I'd lost my core strength. But being exhausted, being overwhelmed, having not enough hours in the day to do anything, and then having intense chronic back pain on top of that, which meant that it was difficult to lift my children up, was sort of almost the straw that broke the camel's back. It's quite common for women to injure themselves in that postnatal period, isn't it? Or to have injuries.
Yeah, definitely. Physical stress in the body is a huge one. If you're in pain, pain's debilitating.
And it's exhausting.
Pain is tiring. Pain's tiring, noise is tiring, lots of things are tiring. Like a sleep's tiring, knee bang is tiring. But literally in the physical state, everyone's physically different in their structure. Everyone has a different pregnancy. Everyone has a different labor. And everyone's recovery postnatally is different. So literally, if you've had any trauma through birth, if you've had any pain throughout the pregnancy, see someone, see a women's health physiotherapist, a women's health osteopath, see someone who specializes in this some area. If you're in pain, pain's what's classified as a clinical issue. So it needs to be sorted out. Potentially won't go away by itself. It could even just get worse. So literally, get some help. It's literally, there's help out there. There's so much help out there. There's more help now than ever. Could be more, but literally there's options.
But it's so frustrating that for new mums, they're at the bottom of the list of priorities. It's more important that the baby has what they need and that the house is tidy and that the dinner party is had. And you know, very often a woman is in serious pain and has been for a while and just doesn't go and see anyone about it. So I do think, you know, the pain is basically the body's way of saying, do something, something needs to be done. So you're doing something wrong. And if you're ignoring that signal, you're ignoring your body's plea for help, essentially.
Yeah, definitely. I think sometimes the pain has got to become great enough to find a solution. So sometimes this is a lot of pain, et cetera, but it's not painful enough to give a solution. I've had new mums come to me 6 months down the trap and say, oh, I'm still in lots of pain. So how long has it been going on for? Oh, since birth. It's like, wow, you have 6 months of constant pain and wonder why they're completely exhausted and they're not doing anything about it. I said, who have you seen? I said, oh, no one. I said, right, first thing, women's health physiotherapist, go sort this out, get diagnosed and see what's going on, sort this out first of all, and just stop putting yourself last on this, because it's literally, if you're looking after a young baby, you need to be an athlete for doing the marathon. If you're going into a marathon with an ache or pain, by the end of it, you're going to be naked. You're just going to be in pieces. So same sort of thing. If you're trying to look after a baby and you're in constant pain, if you're breastfeeding and your shoulders and neck and everything are so tight from the position in, think about maybe change of position. Think about the chair you're sitting in. Think about that. I mean, I'm sort of quite a sort of super fit personal trainer, et cetera, and specialize in this. But literally, when my daughter was born, we didn't have a change table. Oh, didn't need one? It's fine. Just use our bed. I blew my back out in the first couple of weeks. I put my back out where I couldn't even move. And thought, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. But literally, you're having a change table, just change everything. Look at, you know, how you're changing the change table, the cots, the feeding position. All these things can make a difference from a physical point of view. And if you're putting yourself in constant positions of pain in terms of physically, it's just going to not get any better. The baby only gets heavier, but it doesn't get lighter. So
it gets heavier and then mobile, and then you might well be pregnant again. I always say to women, like, this is your Olympics. This is the time you have to be fitter than ever before. So it's so worth taking the time to invest, A, that, you know, you're pain-free and healthy, but B, that you are actually fit. I mean, starting to exercise again, you know, obviously not in the first 6 weeks, but thereafter, I think is such a crucial thing, not only physically, but also emotionally. I mean, we know that regular exercise is as effective as a low dose of antidepressants. So even though you might well not feel like waking up and going for a run around the park or going to do a HIIT class, often if you're a bit overwhelmed and a bit blue, as many new mothers are, that is the best thing that you can possibly do.
Yeah, there's huge links between physical exercise and mental health. The big thing is, what sort of starting point are you going to do with exercise? In this case, I've had so many people who've done 6 weeks, try going back to running. It's like running 6 weeks post C-section, this was, and wonder why I'm massively in pain. She came to me in pain and said, oh, you know, I'm someone told me that I could basically do this and say, well, 6 weeks, so that's what you need. It's like, no, 6 weeks is just recovery time. Give the body a chance. Saying that in the first 6 weeks, you may see a women's health physiotherapist. You may see a specialist, an osteopath, sort of just to check everything out, make sure everything's okay, and then get some basic pelvic floor sort of activation and start to wake the body up. 6 weeks is not like, oh, 6 weeks and go back and do anything. 6 weeks is just a beginning of getting yourself strong again. You know, your body's gone through massive changes over 9 months. So literally, and then depending on the labour, as I mentioned before, so depending on what your body's been through, it's like, okay, give yourself some recovery time, take your time, but see a specialist, go invest the money, invest the time, see a specialist and say, right, what's right for my body? Because as I said, there's no one size fits all in terms of exercise, nutrition. It's like, okay, how's the body, what's right for it now? Because exercise is still stress. Exercise is still stress you're putting on the body. The body simply adapts to that stress for it to get stronger. If you're putting the wrong sort of stress in your body, then all it's going to do is potentially break. Okay, so as I said, it's not HIIT class time. It's not basically just get back to the skinny jeans time. It's like, okay, just start the rebuilding process. But literally then now you've got a good progression of going from here to here to here. Well, they are, excuse me, language, buggering things up. You just don't want to mess things up with it. You just want to basically do things properly. So it's like, okay, is this stress making my body feel good? Is this form of exercise making my body feel good? Is it making it feel worse? If it's making it feel worse, then stop doing it. Stop doing it. And then literally just get some help. Get some help. There's help out there. Definitely help.
And I guess also that realization that whatever you might be being told on Instagram, there is no shortcut to building your strength up again. There is no special corset you can buy. There is no special app you can get. There is no special gadget you can invest in that is going to speed up this process. It is purely little and often and patiently and listening to your body, I guess.
Yeah, and probably turning off Instagram. No offense to all the Instagrammers out there, but literally there's a lot of stuff on there. A lot of stuff.
Well, I mean, I think with all social media, I mean, I'm a big fan of Instagram as long as you know how to curate it. And actually, as a new mother who's realistically quite bored, to be able to kind of, you know, look at lovely interior shots, if that's what makes you happy, then great. But certainly switching off or muting anyone who's making you feel, you know, uncomfortable or, you know, not enough or inadequate in any way.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure from social media. There's a lot of pressure for the term bouncing back. And it's like, look, I'm running, you know, 3 weeks after my baby. I'm doing this, you know, 4 weeks after my baby. I've seen some celebs with millions of followers posting exercise and went, there's no way that one, they should be doing it. There's no way that their followers should be doing it in this time. So I think the filter system is pretty important, knowing what to filter out. If you're looking at getting enjoyment from looking at different things and different things you enjoy and like to follow, fine. But if you're looking at specific postnatal exercise and recovery, then that's not the time to be looking at Instagram.
No, it's probably the time to be getting specific help, which looks at you sort of individually. And that might be as part of a class, but also just thinking you need a bit of individual sort of support there.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Oh, Lyndon, it's been great chatting to you. I think this is something that people rarely think about. They're so focused on getting their baby out that they don't think about that sort of postnatal period. And then when the babies are born, it's so focused on the baby rather than the mother. But, you know, I do believe that mothers are the linchpin, the RSJs of family life. And actually, if we're broken, the kind of the whole family is broken. And that's what's really important for new mums to realise. It is so worth investing in yourself for the happiness and the well-being of your entire family.
Yeah, definitely. I think if the body's broken, if it's broken physically or emotionally sort of thing, then it's hard. It's really hard. And it's literally, I think that's when supporting mums is pretty huge. It's a huge sort of importance out there. Whether it be friends supporting other mums, husbands supporting mums, family, etc. Just having that support network is key. the old saying, it takes a village to raise a baby, but sometimes it takes a whole country, depending on what the mum's going through. So it's basically just like, okay. And for anyone, any friends out there with new mums, it's just their thing, just see what help they need. Because sometimes new mums don't really ask for help, but there's help out there for sure.
Perfect. Well, Lyndon, thanks so much for joining me today. It's great to have this conversation. Where can they find out a bit more about what you do?
Just probably from my website, yummytummies.co.uk. So I'm not sure there. So any information, if you want to contact me directly, just I'm there. Just shoot me a message. If you want any advice or anything, just contact me through my website. And just any questions we've got from the information we put today or anything they need help, just reach out.
Perfect. Well, Lyndon, thank you so much. And thank you all for listening to this episode of The Parenthood. You can subscribe, rate and review wherever you found this podcast. You can also follow me. I'm on Instagram at marina.fogel. I promise you I'm not running around telling women to exercise before or anywhere near sex 6 weeks. but in the meantime, from Lyndon and me, thanks for listening and goodbye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.